Chapter 20. Home in hysterics. Pinsent availed himself of the opportunity to retouch, from a sketch taken upon the spot, his admirable painting of the Arceus flayed alive. When I had afforded sufficient amusement, it was thought proper to remove my body from the gallows, this the more especially as the real culprit had in the meantime been retaken and recognized, a fact which I was so unlucky as not to know. Much sympathy was, of course, exercised in my behalf, and as no one made claim to my corpse, it was ordered that I should be interred in a public vault. Here, after due interval, I was deposited. The sexton departed, and I was left alone. A line of Marston's El Content, Death's a Good Fellow, and Keeps Open House struck me at that moment as a palpable lie. I knocked off, however, the lid of my coffin, and stepped out. The place was dreadfully dreary and damp, and I became troubled with ennui. By way of amusement, I felt my way among the numerous coffins ranged in order around. I lifted them down, one by one, and breaking open their lids, busied myself in speculations about the mortality within. This, I soliloquized, tumbling over a carcass, puffy, bloated, and rotund it has been, no doubt, in every sense of the word, an unhappy and unfortunate man. It has been his terrible lot not to walk, but to waddle to pass through life, not like a human being, but like an elephant, not like a man, but like a rhinoceros. His attempts at getting on have been mere abortions, and his circumgyratory proceedings a palpable failure. Taking a step forward, it has been his misfortune to take two toward the right and three toward the left. His studies have been confined to the poetry of Crabbe. He can have no idea of the wonder of a pirouette. To him, a pas de papillon has been an abstract conception. He has never ascended the summit of a hill. He has never viewed from any steeple the glories of a metropolis. He has been his mortal enemy. In the dog days, his days have been the days of a dog. Therein, he has dreamed of flames and suffocation, of mountains upon mountains, of Pelion upon Ossa. He was short of breath. To say all in a word, he was short of breath. He thought it extravagant to play upon wind instruments. He was the inventor of self-moving fans, wind sails, and ventilators. He patronized DuPont the bellows maker, and he died miserably in attempting to smoke a cigar. His was a case in which I feel a deep interest, a lot in which I sincerely sympathize. But here, said I, here, and I dragged spitefully from its receptacle a gaunt, tall, and peculiar-looking form, whose remarkable appearance struck me with a sense of unwelcome familiarity, here is a wretch entitled to no earthly commiseration. Thus saying, in order to obtain a more distinct view of my subject, I applied my thumb and forefinger to its nose, and causing it to assume a sitting position upon the ground, held it thus, at the length of my arm, while I continued my soliloquy. Titled, I repeated, to no earthly commiseration. Who indeed would think of compassioning a shadow? Besides, has he not had his full share of the blessings of mortality? He was the originator of tall monuments, shot towers, lightning rods, Lombardy poplars. His treatise upon Hades and shadows has immortalized him. He edited with distinguished ability the last edition of Out on the Bones. He went early to college and studied pneumatics. He then came home, talked eternally, and played upon the French horn. He patronized the bagpipes. Captain Barclay, who walked against time, would not walk against him. Windham and Albrecht were his favorite writers, his favorite artist, Fizz. He died gloriously, while inhaling gas levique flatu carupiter, like the fama pudicity in Hieronymus. *1, he was indubitably a, how can you? Interrupted the object of my animadversions, gasping for breath, and tearing off, with a desperate exertion, the bandage around its jaws, how can you, Mr. Lacabreath, be so infernally cruel, as to pinch me in that manner by the nose? Did you not see how they had fastened up my mouth? And you must know, if you know anything, how vast a superfluity of breath I have to dispose of. If you do not know, however, sit down and you shall see. In my situation it is really a great relief, to be able to open one's mouth, to be able to expatiate, to be able to communicate with a person like yourself, who do not think yourself called upon at every period, to interrupt the thread of a gentleman's discourse. Interruptions are annoying, and should undoubtedly be abolished, don't you think so? No reply, I beg you, one person is enough to be speaking at a time. I shall be done by, and then you may begin. How the devil, sir, did you get into this place? Not a word, I beseech you, been here some time myself, terrible accident. Heard of it, I suppose? Awful calamity. Walking under your window some short while ago about the time you were stage-struck, horrible occurrence. Heard of catching one's breath, eh? Hold your tongue, I tell you. I caught somebody else's, had always too much of my own met lab at the corner of the street, wouldn't give me a chance for a word, couldn't get in a syllable edgeways, attacked. Consequently, with epilepsy, blab made his escape, damn all fools. They took me up for dead, and put me in this place, pretty doings all of them. Heard all you said about me, every word a lie, horrible, wonderful, outrageous, hideous, incomprehensible, etc., 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 etc. It is impossible to conceive my astonishment at so unexpected a discourse, or the joy with which I became gradually convinced that the breath so fortunately caught by the gentleman whom I soon recognized as my neighbor Windenough was, in fact, the identical expiration mislaid by myself in the conversation with my wife. Time, place, and circumstances rendered it a matter beyond question. I did not, at least during the long period in which the inventor of Lombardy poplars continued to favor me with his explanations. In this respect I was actuated by that habitual prudence which has ever been my predominating trait. I reflected that many difficulties might still lie in the path of my preservation which only extreme exertion on my part would be able to surmount. Many persons, I considered, are prone to estimate commodities in their possession, however valueless to the then proprietor, however troublesome or distressing in direct ratio with the advantages to be derived by others from their attainment, or by themselves from their abandonment. Might not this be the case with Mr. Windenough? In displaying anxiety for the breath, of which he was at present so willing to get rid, might I not lay myself open to the exactions of his avarice? There are scoundrels in this world, I remembered with a sigh, who will not scruple to take unfair opportunities with even a next-door neighbor, and this remark is from Epictetus. It is precisely at that time, when men are most anxious to throw off the burden of their own calamities, that they feel the least desirous of relieving them in others. Upon considerations similar to these, and still retaining my grasp upon the nose of Mr. W., I accordingly thought proper to model my reply. Monster! I began in a tone of the deepest indignation, monster and double-winded idiot! Dost thou, whom for thine iniquities it has pleased heaven to a curse with a twofold respimption, dost thou, I say, presume to address me in the familiar language of an old acquaintance? I lie, apostrophe forsooth, and hold my tongue, to be sure. Pretty conversation indeed, to a gentleman with a single breath, all this too, when I have it in my power to relieve the calamity under which thou dost so justly suffer, to curtail the superfluities of thine unhappy respiration. Like Brutus, I paused for a reply with which, like a tornado, Mr. Windenough immediately overwhelmed me. Protestation followed upon protestation, and apology upon apology. There were no terms with which he was unwilling to comply, and there were none of which I failed to take the fullest advantage. Preliminaries being at length arranged, my acquaintance delivered me the respiration, for which, having carefully examined it, I gave him afterward a receipt. I am aware that by many I shall be held to blame for speaking in a manner so cursory, of a transaction so impalpable. It will be thought that I should have entered more minutely into the details of an occurrence by which, and this is very true, much new light might be thrown upon a highly interesting branch of physical philosophy. To all this, I am sorry that I cannot reply. A hint is the only answer which I am permitted to make. There were circumstances, but I think it much safer upon consideration, to say as little as possible about an affair so delicate, I repeat, and at the time involving the interests of a third party whose sulphurous resentment I have not the least desire, at this moment, of incurring. We were not long after this necessary arrangement in effecting an escape from the dungeons of the sepulchre. The united strength of our resuscitated voices was soon sufficiently apparent. Scissors, the Whig editor, republished a treatise upon the nature and origin of subterranean noises. A reply rejoinder confutation and justification followed in the columns of a Democratic Gazette. It was not until the opening of the vault to decide the controversy that the appearance of Mr. Windenough and myself proved both parties to have been decidedly in the wrong. I cannot conclude these details of some very singular passages in a life at all times sufficiently eventful without again recalling to the attention of the reader the merits of that indiscriminate philosophy which is a sure and ready shield against those shafts of calamity which can neither be seen, felt, nor fully understood. It was in the spirit of this wisdom that, among the ancient Hebrews, it was believed the gates of heaven would be inevitably opened to that sinner, or saint, who, with good lungs and implicit confidence, should vociferate the word, men. It was in the spirit of this wisdom that, when a great plague raged at Athens, and every means had been in vain attempted for its removal, Epimenides, as Laertius relates, in his second book, of that philosopher, advised the erection of a shrine and temple o' the proper god. Littleton Berry. End of text. The man that was used up. A tale of the late Bugaboo and Kickapoo campaign. Plures, messieu, a fondes vous en o. La moitié. De ma vie et mis el otro tombo. Cornell. I cannot just now remember when or where I first made the acquaintance of that truly fine-looking fellow, Brevet Brigadier General John A. B. C. Smith. Someone did introduce me to the gentleman, I am sure at some public meeting, I know very well held about something of great importance, no doubt at some place or other, I feel convinced, whose name I have unaccountably forgotten. The truth is that the introduction was attended, upon my part, with a degree of anxious embarrassment which operated to prevent any definite impressions of either time or place. I am constitutionally nervous. This, with me, is a family failing, and I can't help it. In especial, the slightest appearance of mystery of any point I cannot exactly comprehend puts me at once into a pitiable state of agitation. There was something, as it were, remarkable, yes, remarkable, although this is but a feeble term to express my full meaning about the entire individuality of the personage in question. He was, perhaps, 6 feet in height, and of a presence singularly commanding. There was an air distingu pervading the whole man, which spoke of high breeding, and hinted at high birth. Upon this topic, the topic of Smith's personal appearance, I have a kind of melancholy satisfaction in being minute. His head of hair would have done honor to a Brutus. Nothing could be more richly flowing, or possess a brighter gloss. It was of a jetty black, which was also the color, or more properly the no color of his unimaginable whiskers. You perceive I cannot speak of these latter without enthusiasm. It is not too much to say that they were the handsomest pair of whiskers under the sun. At all events, they encircled, and at times partially overshadowed, a mouth utterly unequaled. Here were the most entirely even, and the most brilliantly white of all conceivable teeth. from between them, upon every proper occasion, issued a voice of surpassing clearness, melody, and strength. In the matter of eyes, also, my acquaintance was preeminently endowed. Either one of such a pair was worth a couple of the ordinary ocular organs. They were of a deep hazel, exceedingly large and lustrous, and there was perceptible about them, ever and anon, just that amount of interesting obliquity which gives pregnancy to expression. The bust of the general was unquestionably the finest bust I ever saw. For your life you could not have found a fault with its wonderful proportion. This rare peculiarity set off to great advantage a pair of shoulders which would have called up a blush of conscious inferiority into the countenance of the marble Apollo. I have a passion for fine shoulders, and may say that I never beheld them in perfection before. The arms altogether were admirably modeled, nor were the lower limbs less superb. These were, indeed, the knee plus ultra of good legs. Every connoisseur in such matters admitted the legs to be good. There was neither too much flesh, nor too little, neither rudeness nor fragility. I could not imagine a more graceful curve than that of the ephemeris, and there was just that due gentle prominence in the rear of the fibula which goes to the conformation of a properly proportioned calf. I wish to God my young and talented friend Chipino, the sculptor, had but seen the legs of Brevet Brigadier General John A. B. C. Smith. But although men so absolutely fine-looking are neither as plenty as raisins or blackberries, still I could not bring myself to believe that the remarkable something to which I alluded just now, that the odd air of genesis quoi which hung about my new acquaintance, lay altogether, or indeed at all, in the supreme excellence of his bodily endowments. Perhaps it might be traced to the manner, yet here again I could not pretend to be positive. There was a primness, not to say stiffness, in his carriage a degree of measured, and, if I may so express it, of rectangular precision, attending his every movement, which, observed in a more diminutive figure, would have had the least little savor in the world, of affectation, pomposity or constraint, but which noticed in a gentleman of his undoubted dimensions, was readily placed to the account of reserve, hauteur of a commendable sense, in short, of what is due to the dignity of colossal proportion. The kind friend who presented me to General Smith whispered in my ear some few words of comment upon the man. He was a remarkable man, a very remarkable man indeed, one of the most remarkable men of the age. He was an especial favorite too, with the ladies chiefly on account of his high reputation for courage. And that point he is unrivaled indeed, he is a perfect desperado, a downright fire-eater, and no mistake, said my friend, here dropping his voice excessively low, and thrilling me with the mystery of his tone. Downright fire-eater, and no mistake. Showed that, I should say, to some purpose, in the late tremendous swamp fight away down south, with the Bugaboo and Kickapoo Indians. Here my friend opened his eyes to some extent. Bless my soul! Blood and thunder, and all that, prodigies of valor. Heard of him, of course, you know he's the man, and alive, how do you do? Why, how are ye? Very glad to see ye, indeed, here interrupted the general himself, seizing my companion by the hand as he drew near, and bowing stiffly, but profoundly, as I was presented. I then thought, and I think so still, that I never heard a clearer nor a stronger voice, nor beheld a finer set of teeth colon, but I must say that I was sorry for the interruption just at that moment, as, owing to the whispers and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.